Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. On this show, we will focus on strengthening women's mental fitness through sharing the joy, struggle, and wisdom of each woman's journey. Our show is powered by Pivotal Moments. Go to pivotalmoments.org to learn more. Hello, and welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast. This podcast is powered by Pivotal Moments Media. I'm your host, Sandy Lutton, and I'm super excited. We're launching a new series about women helping women. And I think that's so important that we talk about each and every one of our journeys and how we can help each other along the way. And for me, helping each other really is sharing that journey and what we've been on and what we've been through so we can learn from one another. And I also see, you know, sharing as a form of mentorship. So I think it's so important that we have these forums and can talk to some really amazing people and share those stories. And I have my guest today, Tina Fox, who is also a huge fan of mentoring. And I mean, this woman is so phenomenal. You guys are going to just love all the amazing things that she's done. But most importantly, she has been hugely successful corporate career and decided, you know what, now's the time to make the transition and do something on my own. And now she's a serial entrepreneur. And I love the fact that you're going to hear some stories today about how she's seen some really important needs and things that could really help elevate women and other people. And she just said, you know what, I'm going to build a business around this. And the best part about it is she just did it. And I love that. I think that's such a huge opportunity and inspiration to a lot of us out there who can, you know, we see a need, but we don't always know how to act on it or even have the courage to say, I can do this. But Tina has done that. And you're going to hear more about her story today. She's a mom. She's a wife. She's a serial entrepreneur. She's also very proud of her Chinese American heritage. And I think that's so important to share. And so welcome, Tina. Welcome to the Her Journey Told podcast.
Thank you, Sandy. It's so great to be here. And yes, I am proud of my Chinese American heritage. And anybody who's celebrating this month, this is May kicks off the Asian American month. So this is our month.
Right. That's right. And it's also Mental Health Awareness Month, which that's what we're all about here, is mental fitness and sharing those stories that we can all learn from and help each other become more mentally fit and stronger and living those successful, thriving lives. So we got a lot to celebrate in the month of May.
For sure. And warmer weather.
That's right. Thank goodness for that. And if you can hear it in my voice. I'm a little nasally today because I got the allergies kicking in. So bear with me, but I don't think they could edit that part of it out, but hey, we'll just roll with it.
It sounds great. It sounds like tens of millions of other Americans. So you're right in line.
Well, I definitely have a little bit raspier voice, so maybe that'll work to my advantage in some way. I definitely won't be singing for anyone. I promise you that. But Tina, so happy to have you here today. And I'm so super excited to talk about, you know, kind of where you've been and where you've come from. And I know that you have always been a supporter of women, but I want to talk specifically about Women on Course. So actually, I'm going to back up for a minute. You left a very successful corporate career and said, I'm going to do something completely different. Tell us more about that.
Well, that was, speaking of pivotal moments, pun intended, that was a pivotal moment for me, Sandy. You're a mom too, so you can probably appreciate this. I was in a 22-year career that I really loved, and I had started it right out of college. I'm proud to say that I was a salesperson for all those years in corporate America. I chose a singular vertical market, that being medical device. And got to see a lot of great things, got to see cutting edge innovation, healing patients in non-invasive or minimally invasive ways. It was just one of those careers that people dream of because you get to make a difference every single day. And so as life moved on, I was fortunate enough to meet and marry my husband later in life. We had children later in life. And so I had established this career and I had this routine. And then all of a sudden, with the kids, I remember distinctly one evening, and I was in a role at the time where I was in a national capacity. So although I resided just outside of Washington, D.C., I was traveling all over the United States. And I had relegated myself to either leaving first thing in the morning so that my kids didn't see me leaving or leaving after they had gone to bed. The suitcase was a source of anxiety. So had to make sure that was put away until I needed to leave. And one morning at 4:30 in the morning, when I was zipping up the suitcase, my then 5-year-old son poked me in the back and said, looked up at me, scared me to death because it was 4:30 and everything was quiet as a mouse. And I whipped around to see what was that. And it was him with these big green eyes, holding his little whoobie. He'd made his way out of his bed. And he just looked at me and this voice came up and he just said, "Mommy, you've been gone too long."
Wow.
So what do you do with that? You know, you're in this position of, I love my career, I love my family. How do you manage to having it all? Which I've decided you don't have it all, at least not at the same time. You can have it all, but it needs to be spaced out and some things rise to the top and some things don't. And I remember hearing a talk one time about rubber balls and glass balls and being a juggler in life.
Oh.
And the rubber balls, if you drop them, it's okay. They'll bounce back. But if you've got the glass balls into that mix of juggling, if you drop a glass ball, that's not recoverable. So that moment at 4:30 in the morning, that was a glass ball moment, and wow, it wasn't going to get dropped. I just need to figure out how to take care of this glass ball, that being my family. And, you know, conversations ensued with the company, and it wasn't going to work out in the way that I needed it to work out, which was really devastating to me because I'm always about, you know, win-wins and we can make this work. We can make this work. We can solve this problem. You know, the other side of this didn't want to solve the problem, not the way that I wanted to. So can't change other people, can only change yourself.
That's right. Excellent point.
So I decided to change my mind, and that was that. So that whole process took like a year and a half. A lot of people think, oh, so that happened, and then the next day, you know, you just change your mind. No, you know, it's like losing weight. It takes time. It's right. Not an overnight thing. So when I finally decided to exit, it was under the consideration of demoting myself. I wanted to stay in the market and I thought, well, I'll just go back and do what I had done when I was 21 and then I'll come back later. And that was kind of a big horse pill to swallow because, you know, we've all probably done high school at this point in our lives and you can probably go back to high school. You probably do it a lot better, but who wants to go back to high school?
Right. No right. One does.
So I went back to high school for all intents and purposes, as far as like what type of role I took in this self-demotion. And during that time, my husband actually was in a business decision-making of his own. And I was very encouraging of him to become an entrepreneur, not so much for myself. It's one of those things where you go do it. I'm sure.
Right.
And he ended up doing it. And then shortly thereafter, he kind of did the reverse. He said, you know what? You encouraged me to do this. What's to say that you couldn't do it for yourself? And of course, there's a lot to think about. And this is the real world stuff that people don't talk about, right? It's like, well, what about healthcare?
Right.
What about the mortgage? What about all the things? How you can't just turn something off and everything works out. And at the time, my youngest son, we were spending months at Children's Hospital because he had two kidneys that needed repair. So healthcare was a big deal to us. I couldn't just like turn it off.
Right.
So we talked about it for a while. And then I decided to join him as a consultant to our company in real estate. He's a title and settlement attorney. And that was my first purview into entrepreneurship. It was sort of like a toe dipping in the water. It was with somebody I obviously trusted. You know, we were going to doing this together. We had the same goals. We had the same concerns. We had the same needs. And so that made it more palatable as far as my entrepreneurial journey. And we leveraged his expertise. We leveraged my expertise to come together to build out the first company. And that took off. That was great. And so after serving in that capacity for 5 years, we have this decision that, you know, at some point in time I would exit and I would be able to go do other things that really felt connected to me. And that's when Women on Course came about. So that kind of starts off the journey.
Yeah. So that's fascinating because I know I've heard your story before, you and I've talked several times now, but I'm still reminded that
even though each and every one of our journeys truly is unique, you and I have so many similarities. I also started in sales, had a sales career, was top in my field for a very long time, provided the benefits for my family. And there became this point in my life where I said, I know there's more for me out there. And I didn't know what that looked like, but I knew I wanted to have a greater impact. But sometimes we get kind of caught up in, well, I can only have more if it's, you know, if I can still take care of my family, if I can still provide benefits, and we put it in this box, right? And, yes. And it takes you a while to get to a place. And I remember my husband at one point, he's like, will you please go figure out what you're going to do? He goes, because you've complained and you've just worried and you've stressed. And he's like, just do it. And I was like, he's so right. I just need to trust and have faith and just do it. And, you know, it's funny how this happened, but I quit my job. So I resigned one day. Mm-hmm. Then that afternoon, I got a call from a woman who said, hey, Sandy, I've been trying to connect with you for a year now. I just wanted to see how things are going. And I said, oh, and she was a career coach. And I said, oh, well, I just resigned from my job today. And she's like, we need to talk. And I'm not exaggerating. Within 2 weeks, I had a job offer of, at the time, what I thought was my dream job. This is like everything I ever wanted. It was more responsibility. I could have more of an impact. I could, you know, use my sales skills, but yet can have, you know, a larger contribution. I could still provide for my family in all the ways that I needed to. And I think that was my, even though that didn't, I did that job for 5 years. So it's funny how you dipped your toe into the entrepreneurship world. I did that for 5 years. And then I said, okay, I'm traveling all the time. I felt like in order to take on that role, I had to give up other things, and being the mom and being with my children and stuff was one of the sacrifices. And it just was not, that was one of, like you said, the glass ball. I couldn't let that one go. And I said, I've got to figure out another way to do this. And that's when I stepped into entrepreneurship. But it wasn't easy, and it wasn't an easy decision. And it took a lot of things going down this path to get me to that place. And fear played a huge role in it, you know, and holding on to something that maybe in those 5 years, I felt like looking back on it now, I was like, oh, I probably did that a little longer than I needed to. But it took that for me to build the courage, but also, and you and I've talked about this before too, is building that community of mm-hmm. people around you who say, yes, you can, when you're saying, no, I can't, and they're supporting you. So tell me more about how your community played a role, and how did you find that community?
You know, that's funny you bring that up. So at first it was like this science, this sociology experience. So when I did that first move of, all right, I'm going to demote myself. Like, I don't have any other avenues. I didn't have an idea for a company. I didn't have a product or service that I was, you know, going to support. I just needed time. I needed time to think. Mm-hmm. I needed to be able to command the space I was in so that it was like second nature. I didn't have to think too much so that I could use my mental capacity to support the future of what that was going to look like. And so when I had done that, my community, like yours, was a sales community. You know, salespeople.
Oh yeah, I mean,
we're all like out there gunning it, right? We're just, I mean, everything is like, what's the next mountain to climb? So when I made that announcement, I had this 50-50 split of the community that I had known for most of my career.
Right,
50% of the people would say things in the bucket of, that's okay. I think you're making the right decision. Totally understand about family. You've never burnt any bridges. You have a really good reputation. You can always come back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they were, in a way, they were being very supportive. But what I was hearing in between the lines was, wow, like that really stinks that you're going to have to do this change and make this sacrifice. But because you've done well so far, like, good luck to you. And we'll see you back later. Right.
Right.
And then there was this other 50% that was like, you know, what are you doing? You know, where is that going to lead? And why don't you keep in touch with me? I'm really curious as to how this works out. They were rooting me on, but they were also freaked out that I was doing this crazy thing in their mind. Right. And they never said, come back. they always said, you know, go machete wherever you're going to machete figure and then tell me how to do it.
Ah, interesting.
And most of the people I worked with were men, which was another cool dynamic because, you know, I had always seen them with a lot of bravado in sales. We all had that to a certain degree, but they were being very truthful in, I think, what they were revealing about themselves in me putting out my vulnerabilities of my journey ahead, that being the unknown, that being the, this isn't working out for me right now, that being, you know, I've got the glass ball and the rubber ball and which one, you know, they were really showing me who they were. And so I found that whole situation fascinating. And to this day, I can even look on social media and I can see who still follows me out of the curiosity. And I see how it impacts them because I see the things that they're now trying. And so in some way, I feel like, well, maybe I help spark something for my male counterparts too, which I know this is a Her Journey podcast, but I thought that was pretty cool. That was my community back then. My community, of course, changed over time and it's gotten a lot smaller, but that has also given me tremendous focus, which isn't so bad. So I don't know about you. I mean, like, what about you when you went through that? Did you have people saying the same thing to you?
Well, absolutely. And it's interesting too, because like you, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but everyone puts you in that box. So I was doing sales for an accounting firm, mostly male dominated, right? Mostly men in my purview. And I had a huge network because my job was to go out and find business. So anyone I could connect with, right, I would. But it was interesting how they were like, well, you should just go work for a different firm. I can't tell you how many job offers I got to go do the exact same job for a different firm. And I'm like, you don't understand. I'm not unhappy where I work. It wasn't about where I worked or the people I worked with. I just wanted more for myself, but I just didn't know exactly what that looked like. And I'd even talked to, you know, a lot of different people, mentors of mine are like, oh, you just need to go work over here or just go do this. Or they would say, well, you have to figure out what you want and then go get it. And I was like, well, that's what I'm struggling with. So it was interesting. I still say divine intervention, right? Where, you know, that someone called me and said, hey, what are you doing? I just felt compelled. I needed to reach out to you today, even though I've been trying to get in touch with you for a year now. I was just like,
I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit on that. One of the things that you said that I think your audience should hear is, you know, you made the decision to leave. So you had some uncertainties, you made the decision. Yeah. It wasn't until after you had decided done.
Good point.
That the call came. Now that was very fortuitous, the timing of that call.
Right.
But you had to have made your own decision and taken the action to let something go. And I think for that window to have opened, you had to kick the door shut. And you finally felt a little bit of the breeze coming in from the, you know, it took your attention someplace else. You wouldn't have noticed that if you were still hanging out doing what you were doing. So,
oh absolutely. And that's such a great point. And I mean, I really do think it takes a leap of faith. And I know that's not an easy thing to do, but at some point you just have to trust that there is more. That's why you got to trust your intuition. There is more out there. There is more you can do and contribute to. And sometimes it, just as you said, it takes closing that door before you can open another one and figure out like what's next. And it did, but I, like you, I felt like the next job was actually my runway to my future. It gave me the runway to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. And I ended up working with speakers, right? So all these prolific speakers globally, amazing, like with these beautiful messages and these platforms to go out and share and inspire others. And that really drove me. And I'm like, I got to do more of that. I want to help give some of these. And oftentimes we worked with very well-known people. And I would always get asked the question, who's your favorite speaker? And I was like, oh, I don't know if I could pick a favorite, but the ones that inspired me the most were usually the ones no one had ever heard of. They just had these really compelling stories of like adversity and overcoming and being hugely successful. And those are the people that I wanted to learn from, that I was drawn to. And I noticed how much they struggled to kind of create demand for themselves and for their message, mainly because people didn't know how to find them. So my goal at that point was, how can I help these people who have these powerful messages build a platform to get their message out to the people who need to hear it the most. And that's what inspired me to ultimately leave that job and move into building my own company to do just that.
Which that right there, your definition of what you were doing, scratch that itch. So you had this itch of, I want to go out. I don't know what it is. I just want to do something bigger. And then through your listening and inspiration, you figured it out over time that if I did this in my role, I would, my impact would be so much greater than right. what, so see, over time, it just sort of materialized because you had been actively thinking about it. Now, going back to that, that community piece, when you were doing that, did you find that your community was supporting you through this? What was your community saying? I'm curious.
My community was, well, again, like you, it was a little bit divided. There were those people who were like, what is this business? I don't understand. How do you do that? And, you know, what's the revenue model and how are you going to make money doing this? And you know what? I didn't have all the answers to all the questions. I really didn't. But I had people that I was working directly with also, some of these, you know, speakers, well-known speakers who were saying, you have a gift and you need to act on that. You absolutely can and should help people build this. So it really was divided. And I think there are those people out there who can't see past maybe their own fears. Right. And then there are those people out there who are just visionaries who are like, and like you said, some of them are like, that is an amazing idea. You should do it. But they're not necessarily the ones who are going to, or they're those people who are also on the same track and figuring it out. Like, where do I go next? Because even with a message, if you're, you know, I'll take, you know, one of those speakers as an example, who is out there speaking, making a ton of money doing it. They were never just satisfied with just that. They were always looking for, how am I going to reach a broader audience? How am I going to customize my message for the people who need to hear it the most? How will I reach those people? And they were looking at all different platforms to do that. So it could be social media, it could be TV shows, it could be books, it could be anything. So I saw that and I thought, you know, part of the problem is most people don't know how to manage all of that. Suddenly they have three or four different agents. I've got to do my social media, which we all know can be completely overwhelming just to manage your own personal social media, but to actually use it as a platform to get your message out to the people who need to hear it the most. There's a skill, there's art, and there's a strategy behind that. So how do you bring it all together? And I watched a lot of people struggle to do that. So going back to that community, I think I saw a need and I thought there's a need here, but a lot of people didn't necessarily see that as a perceived need. They were kind of like, I don't get it.
But you know, that's so I call that like tuning your frequency. So it's not that if people weren't on board, all of a sudden you're going to say, well, you're dead to me. I mean, you're not on the same path as me, then forget about it. You might as well. It's not that. It's just that I think one of the things I found is when you become very definite in your purpose, or you have a feeling that you are trying to satisfy, and it's really an overcoming and overwhelming daily feeling that you are constantly working through, you'll notice, if you allow for it, I think, at least I noticed, that the community that comes in during that time, or that connects with me in that time, their frequency is just different. And so if it's of interest to me, I will upgrade my frequency. I'll try to match that frequency so that I can continue to go after this urge and this feeling. And so some of the other frequencies, they just get a little bit lower. They're just, you know, they're still there, but it's just, I'm trying to operate at a new level because I have a curiosity, I have a need, I have a want, a desire, a passion. And so it's just, you know, playing with all of the knobs to make sure that you get to the right frequency. And when you're finally there, which I'm always getting there, I don't think I've actually gotten there.
Right.
It feels better. It just feels, it's like music to your ears. Right. So that's what I think about my community.
It absolutely is. And I love the whole like fine tuning your frequency, because I do think that's so important. And I think that's something that we're not taught. No one says you just got to like go with your gut and feel what, you know, like really hone in on where your mind is taking you and where your where your passions are. We're oftentimes told to find the secure job, stay within these societal structures. You've got to get, you know, I always say, you know, growing up, I was always told, you got to do really well in school. You got to get a great education. You got to get a 4-year degree. You've got to get a good paying job. You got to find a husband. You got to have children, you know, all that stuff. And it's like, wow, that's a lot of pressure. And, but it's also very limiting. What if that's not the direction you want to go? And I think we have to be more open-minded to that. But I think ultimately it's not about what everyone else is saying you should be doing. It's about what your intuition and your mind is telling, like your passions are telling you where to go. We don't always listen to that. I feel like, especially as women, we tend to tune that out a bit. And we get so focused on all the other responsibilities that you start to not hear your frequency.
Yeah. I'm excited that, you know, speaking of women, I'm excited for women in the United States. I can't say this globally because we're very fortunate to live the lives that we do here in the US. And I feel like there's, you know, with every generation, we stand on the shoulders of the generation before us. So I feel like a lot of that regimented considerations of the past, you know, the it's being opened up to be more considerate of, well, what if that's not my path? And so that gives me hope for all the future generations. But in that, there is this defining of your own success that needs to take place. And if you are an American, I'm going to assume, I'm going to make this very broad stroke assumption that most Americans are going to tie some sort of dollar sign, title, something like that to their definition of success. And what you were just speaking to about, you know, finding your passion, that's less in the definition. And if it makes a definition at all, it doesn't make it in any level of detail. And I think that's where we need to get more clear as individuals as to what's a good life going to look like for us? What does that mean? You know, you got to wrap everything in there. We started this off with mental fitness. You got to wrap everything in there from your mental fitness to your physical fitness, you know, to the community that you surround yourself with, to the work that inspires you to get up without an alarm clock in the morning. All of those things need to become the definition of success. And then I truly feel when you start to follow that, you are showcasing to the world an aspect of yourself that is so genuine that other human beings talk about frequency. Other human beings naturally gravitate towards your frequency because it's an authentic frequency. It's a genuine frequency. And things start to happen for you. And your definition starts to take root. So that's something, you know, kind of summing up everything that we just talked about a second ago, that's something that I feel like we could do a better job of. And I'm always redefining my definition. I thought I knew it. When I was in that single vertical and I was doing my thing for 22 years, I thought I knew it.
Right.
And man, here I am 9 years later and that definition is completely blown out of the water. And so instead of being, you know, singular and vertical market and all this stuff, I'm a little bit more broad this way, but I'm staying within a zone that is my own.
Right.
And that feels better.
It's so interesting to me too, when we think about women and careers and where we go, or just people in general, not just women. I mean, this is everyone, but we ask all the questions like what's your education, what's your experience, what's your background, all these things, but we never ask where are your passions, some people may ask what's your hobbies, but what's your heart telling you and what do you really desire and what makes you the happiest? Like, what are the things that you've done in your past job that you enjoyed the most, you know? And I don't think we ever really dig into that. Like a resume, you can't find that from a resume.
Well, I tell you, Sandy, it's because people have a hard time with subjective.
It's so objective, true. It is true.
Objective is so much easier than check. You know, there's a range, good, bad, right? And people just want everything to be put in these little boxes. But the subjective is so much harder. I do think that's the one, if there's a saving grace on aging, that's the thing about aging, is that we get a little bit more embraced with the subjective because there's been enough life experience that it's like, wow, I thought it was this way, but then I saw a completely different side of the story. And what a difference. Right. And
so
your mind shifts. Your mind.
So true. So I'm going to take us back just a minute because we started down the path of Women on Course.
Yes.
So tell me what Women on Course is and why you started it. I already know, but I want our audience to hear it.
Okay. All right. Well, first I have to make one correction. I didn't start it. I came on board as a partner. So, so Women on Course, what I started in my first company with my husband. So Cobalt Settlements is our company.
Okay.
And what I had noticed was, and this goes to very early on when you said there's a need, fill the need, fix the problem.
Right.
So that is very much a part of my personality. So when I started with Cobalt and I had a career primarily full of, you know, a male audience, right? I had male supervisors, male peers, male customers. When I got into real estate, there's all the women. Like there were a lot of women that I said, oh, that's where you've been hiding. I didn't know where y'all were hiding. So it was really great to see women in a sales capacity, which that's, you know, what real estate is at its very base. And what I also realized is a lot of these women did not have formal sales background like I had. They had come from, you know, either accounting or maybe some of them were stay-at-home moms or some of them were teachers. They had come from a variety of wonderful backgrounds and they were applying their knowledge to this new career of theirs. But I thought that there was a way that I could support them in the build out of their own brand and their own sales capacity because, you know, we live in just outside of Washington, D.C. This is a very expensive market.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about legal contracts that can move into the millions of dollars with two very emotional parties, that being the buyer and the seller. So here you are as an agent having to manage to all of that. That's a lot. That's a sophisticated sale in my opinion. So I thought there might be an opportunity for us to sit down, talk about what this looks like and support each other on creating ourselves better in these lanes. And so I created this group called Women in Business. And it was eight women that I had said, hey, why don't you come join me for lunch and let's have this discussion. Well, we decided we were going to meet quarterly. So eight turned into 16, turned into 25, turned into 40. Now I needed to find a new venue because I didn't have enough space per the fire code. So then I called up a friend and I said, hey, can we look at using your restaurant? So then we were hosting events, you know, of well over 100 people. And at this point in time, there was 1,300 people that had connected with me through this Women in Business group in a 3-year period.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it grew very rapidly, very on accident. And I also found that it was less real estate, just women in business, because they were bringing their friends who they thought could benefit from the conversation. So around this time, I was like, golly, I'm a little, like the whole, you know, juggling all the balls type thing. This is a lot going on. I still got my family I'm trying to manage too. I've got Cobalt and now I've got this Women in Business thing. Well, I was a panelist at a speaking event and my now business partner, Donna Hoffman, was also at that event. And as she was answering the questions, I thought, gosh, she's got such a unique group and she's got some really cool ideas. And Women on Course is actually Donna Hoffman is the founder. She founded it 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's leveraging the game of golf for your personal and professional network, which I thought that is super unique, super cool. And I thought back to my days. So when I got into sales with mostly men, they operated on the golf course. I did not operate on the golf course.
Right. Same for me.
So I needed to figure out pretty quickly how to get involved in golf, which I did. And that helped the trajectory of my career for sure, because it gave me an informal avenue to connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful. And so I thought, okay, I've got this group of 1,300 women. Donna Hoffman's got this group. Maybe instead of me trying to continue to build out my group, maybe there's some synergy here where we could combine our efforts. And so I ended up consulting for Donna, and we ended up merging my group into Women on Course. And over time, we dated each other for about 6 months, and we decided that, you know what, this would be a really great permanent partnership. And so we went and signed the legal documents so that I would become co-owner with her.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was, although we have a membership base to which she's been operating very well for a number of years, we really wanted to reach out to corporate America and to the women in corporate America, much like myself, who wanted to get connected on course. Maybe their companies were going to sales meetings, always at some beautiful golf course, but the women wouldn't participate. Or maybe they were doing some tournaments for charity or maybe they have clients that they want to connect with on course. Women on Course serves as that entry place for anybody. I don't care if you've never swung a club before. It's okay.
Right. Right.
You can come in. We will take you through our models and take you through our events, and we will get you course ready so that you can go out and create your own community through this informal network. And that's been going along for several years. We've worked with companies like HSBC. We're currently working with Freddie Mac. We work with lots of different attorney firms, lots of different banking firms. Golf is prevalent in all of those areas. So we're very excited to continue the growth of that. And that's really my function at Women on Course, is to support the growth of the corporate side of things. And we do a lot with ERGs too, employee resource groups.
So I'm gonna flip it around for a second, because I actually had an opportunity to attend a Women on Course event, actually multiple times. And I'm not even sure if I told you this story, but again, being in the accounting world, mostly male dominated, all of our partners were out, you know, golfing with clients and doing this. And, you know, I was always at golf tournaments, but I was always like the volunteer on the sideline, right? And I wanted to be part of the action. And I had a female partner come to me one day and she's like, "Hey, I got invited to this Women on Course event. Why don't you come with me?" And I was like, "Yeah." So we went, we had a great time. It was great networking. I think that particular day it was, like we were on a putting green and just practicing, right? Oh, yeah. At a golf course. And it was amazing. And I met amazing. And there were women there I already knew that I didn't know that were, you know, into golf or wanting to be into golf. And it just created this really fun afternoon for us. And so we did that several times. It was so much fun, but it also gave me an opportunity to connect with this partner and this female partner in my office. Let's be honest. Outside, we both were mothers and things like that, but it was very much a business relationship, and our relationship deepened, and we actually had a better partnership. I've been on the sales side and my job was to go out and find new clients for her. Now I better understood who is the right fit as a client, because not everyone's the right fit. I mean, that's part of the sales. It's not just selling service, it's selling the team, especially when it comes to consulting and things like that. So I got to know her on a deeper level. We got to build a network together. And then I stopped being the volunteer on the golf course and actually started playing in the tournaments. So it works. And I gained so much confidence around that. And I mean, I was in that job for almost 15 years. So you can imagine my job was to get to know CFOs and, you know, people at the highest level. Most of the time they were men, and most of the time they were golfers. And it's, you know, it's just there, but it gave me confidence around that and actually ultimately helped me to do my job better. So
you did not tell me that story in all the conversations that we got. I can't believe you didn't mention that.
Well, we've had so many like awesome conversations. There's just so much you could pack in and what, you know, yeah. In those moments.
Well, but that's exactly. So you are the perfect meme for that. For all the right reasons, especially the building confidence. I tell you what, there is no bad day on course. I don't care where your ball goes during the day. Yep. There is no bad day on course. You've got manicured greens, you're outdoors. It's absolutely gorgeous. And you're getting work done and you're connecting with people. So there's just, it's a great time. So that's why I decided to dedicate my time to Women on Course, because for me, all those years, Women on Course was the logical women empowerment opportunity in a super unique and fun avenue. And so it made all the sense in the world. And Donna Hoffman is a dream to work with. I mean, she's a visionary. And I always say somehow pixie dust just surrounds her. And I'm always trying to get some pixie dust on me because magic just happens. So we have a lot of fun together.
It's so funny that you said magic, because the reason why I wanted to launch this series, Women Helping Women, and really highlighting that was because when I find that when you get two really smart, powerful women together, I mean, individually they're great, but together it's magic. It's truly magic. And I look at, like, I'm a big fan of the home edit. I love to be organized.
Oh, yes.
I'm not that organized, But look at those two.
Wait a minute, your Oreo cookies are not stacked.
I don't have everything color-coded by rainbow or anything like that. I'm not, most things aren't labeled, which is why I have at times put powdered sugar in things that called for flour. I'm just saying, but I would love, I love the thought of being more organized, but I look at that and I see the magic that, that comes from that. And I think that's just something that, that was something for me, I really wanted to highlight and have people talking about. And like, for women, let's all find our magic. Like, let's find that person who has the pixie dust that makes us, that makes us even better than who we are alone, right? I love the thought of we're so much more powerful together. So let's find ways to work together. And I want to kill that whole, the stigma around, you know, women not supporting women and women being their own worst enemies. I don't truly believe that. I think that exists in some cases, but I think the majority of women really do want to support each other. They're not necessarily competitive with one another, and they just need to figure out how and see that there is an opportunity to be even more powerful and more successful at what we want and what we love by just working together.
I could not agree with you more. You know, gone are the days. And unfortunately, you know, just to keep it real, I have been part of an industry where if women had made it to a higher level, I did not see them doing any sort of pull through. And that was very hurtful when, you know, you feel like I've got a good heart, I'm posting up good numbers, I'm doing a good job. And it's maybe a little bit unfair for those that look up to these women. You know, it's not, maybe if they didn't raise their hand to say, look up to me, that's unfair for us to do that. But there's also, I feel like, a responsibility when you have done something well for yourself in giving back, just in advice or guidance, you know, something as simple as that. You don't need to be the champion for, you know, everybody that is coming through behind you, but advice is really important. And, you know, that kind of leads into this mentorship concept, because at Women on Course, we started a mentorship thing. We had all these women out there, and we have a lot of women who are just shy to come on course because it's like, I don't know the etiquette. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't even know what to wear.
Right. Which is very important to women. Like, what do I wear?
That's right. So there's just a lot going on course. And so we have these great members who are like, I raise their hand. I'm happy to mentor. And I'll actually play with them, because I want them to get good in the game. I want us to be accepted onto courses in the same numbers that men are accepted. I want us to own courses eventually. So we have a really great group of women at Women on Course that support mentoring of other women, at least into the game of golf, which I think is brilliant. So I love that synergy that happens.
So you and I have talked about in the past how it was hard for us in our careers to find women mentors. Mm. And I think part of it is that dynamic that you just talked about, is you don't, I also worked in a male I'm struggling with that word today, male dominated industry. Mm-hmm. And women oftentimes did leave the industry as they got, you know, as they went up through the ranks to take care of other things. Cause we talked about the fact that you can't always have everything you want at the time you want it. And sometimes it's, you'll have it at this point, but not at this point. So we saw a lot of women drop out, but that I've seen that dynamic change dramatically over the past decade. Yes. And it's super exciting to see. But talk a little bit about kind of that, what you and I talked about, like we struggled to find those women mentors. So tell me more about what you're doing now and what drove that.
Yeah. So the mentorship concept, just kind of played heavy in my head. And a lot of things that happened in my life is because I had an interest and I volunteered time, right? So I had an interest in supporting women in the sales capacity for real estate. And I decided to volunteer time, bring them together for lunch. I paid for the lunches. I mean, so it was, you know, this wasn't a money-making thing. This was, I just really wanted to help support other people, and that kind of matriculated. Well, then with what I'm doing now, a few years ago, I had met an old college friend out for coffee one day, and she mentioned to me, how come you don't go back to the university and support the university? And I said, well, no, I've been back for a homecoming. Like, no, not a homecoming, you dummy. She said, no, you need to go back with everything that you've been doing, and like, you need to go back. You need to go teach a class, speak something. And I was like, really? They want us to do that kind of stuff? She's like, yeah. I said, nobody's ever called me. She goes, they're busy. They're busy running the university. You just need to go apply yourself. So she plugged me in with a friend on campus who I call the switchboard operator, because once you get plugged in with that friend on campus, she connects you with everything. So I ended up teaching some classes. I befriended a professor, a woman named Carol. And Carol, you know, she's just such a kind-hearted human being. And we really got along, and I would support her classes. So she was teaching all this stuff in entrepreneurship. And then I would come in as a speaker to kind of give the real world, this is what happens, right? Good, bad, or indifferent. And so we had a nice like juxtaposition. And Carol says to me one day after class, she's like, you know, I really enjoy working with you. Thank you for coming down and judging certain things and talking to class and stuff. She said, but I feel like you could do more.
Yeah. I was like, of course your radar goes up. Like, what?
I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to parent these two kids at home. I'm trying to like, you know, help support COBOL. I was like, we just got a lot of stuff going on. There's no more blood coming out of this turn. So, but it was one of those things where when you have such a kind-hearted person say to you something, your ear picks up on it. Mm. And so it was what I thought about when I went to bed. It was what I thought about when I got up in the morning, when I was in the shower. I was like, what does she mean by doing something more? So I thought about my own life. And you mentioned earlier that I'm a proud Chinese American woman. And so my mother is from China. And my father is a military, retired military U.S. Army colonel. And so talk about a lot of pressure growing up in a house. I had a tiger mom and a military father. So there was a path I should have taken, and that was it. But when I graduated from U.S. University, I was the first in my generation. I'm the oldest to graduate from U.S. University. My father only having a military career and my mother being an immigrant from another country, there was no network for me to rely upon. I was just like, okay, I'm graduating and I need to get a job. And there wasn't a whole lot of advice going on. The internet, I hate to say it, wasn't out yet. So there wasn't that either. And when I thought about what I could do to help Carol, the professor, I thought, you know, I wish I had a mentor. I'm going to build a mentorship program for the university. So that's what I walked back to her and I said, Carol, I figured it out. This is my story. This is what I want to build. I'm really connected to it. And she said, okay, build it. So I did. And I got to test it out in her entrepreneurial classes, which was great because a lot of students from all sectors of campus were minoring in entrepreneurship. So whether they're in music or communication or nursing, they all had decided to take some of these minor classes. And I got to meet a lot of students. I took my own professional connections to make the mentors of this group. And so because, you know, they were my friends, I really trusted them and the advice that they were giving these students. And we ended up doing this for 4 years. It was wildly successful. And then we took a sabbatical. Campuses like that word sabbatical. We took a sabbatical for COVID.
Yeah.
We weren't sure what was up and what was down. So we took a sabbatical. And during that time, I was really missing that connection. I was missing the outcomes of what was happening because the mentees and the mentors were both equally in love with supporting one another. The mentors loved being connected to a generation of new ideas and new questions and, you know, just knew everything. And then the students loved hearing somebody who, quite honestly, wasn't a peer, wasn't a parent, and wasn't a professor. Somebody right. that, you know, they already had a ton of skin in the game with. Mm-hmm. They were just so excited to hear from this other person who was really vested in providing them with good insight. And so I said, you know, when I come out of COVID, I gotta do this better. We gotta make this better. I need to systemize this thing. I need to get it out to more people. Oh, and by the way, if there's any way for there to be revenue to come into this company, mm-hmm. I need it to go back out in some form of social responsibility as far as philanthropy. And right. so I had learned about this this type of company called a B Corporation, B mm-hmm. as in baby. And B Corps are profit with purpose. So these are for-profit companies that have decided in their bylaws to set some sort of social responsibility piece and give back. So we know the names, Subaru, Bumba Socks, Ben and Jerry's, Towski Resort. All of these people do something, all these businesses do something to give back. So I came up with Turn Mentoring, which has officially launched this year. I'm having a big kickoff in Richmond on May the 18th. And the give back component of this is in scholarships for the university. And this year I was on campus several times. And one of the prevailing topics, unfortunately, was about mental health and how we were really struggling as a nation, particularly in the collegiate set. Mm-hmm. And so we have designated one of the greatest needs outside of scholarships for the university as mental health. And so we'll be donating back to the counseling center, which is just inundated with requests on a daily basis. And so I feel as though it's timely. It's probably of all the things I've done, Sandy, it's probably the frequency that I need to be on. It's finally arrived. I'm finally getting into everything has been awesome and great and has tremendous meaning to me. But this one, this frequency, I'm just riding this wave as long as I can. So we'll see if I can make a good impact on this one.
I love how life is just such an evolution. And I think when we're younger, we're so focused on a destination and getting there. And I've got to look like this, or I've got to have that title, or I've got to be making this much money. But like you said, that's the beauty of age, right? When you get older, you start to realize like, wow, you know what? I had to go through all those periods of my life, all those waves in order to get here to make the most impact and have purpose in my life. And I think that's so beautiful. I love what you said about just mentorship in general is I think one of the reasons why it's so hard to find mentors is because if I said to someone, would you be my mentor? They're immediately going to think, wow, that's a lot of work. Just like you said, when the woman said to you, like, you could do more, and you're like, what, how much more can I possibly do? It does feel like work, but it doesn't have to be.
That's right.
And I think it really can be as simple as sharing our stories or finding that community that you can connect with and, you know, learn from, but also give back to in your own learning. So I think that's so important. And I feel like you are the epitome of that. You've done that, but not only that, but you just take it a whole other level and like, I'm going to build a business around this. I'm going to have social impact. And to me, that's truly, truly inspiring. So thank you for that. The one thing I want people on our audience today to know how to find you, because you are a speaker. You do go out, talk about entrepreneurship, mentorship, leadership, you know, supporting women. Where can people find you if they're interested in having you on their stage?
Yeah. So you can find me lots of places, which is good and bad. Sometimes there's a lot to manage too, but, Fox Paradigm, it's on this Zoom link here. If you just go to foxparadigm.com, that'll connect you to me, to Women on Course and what I do mm-hmm. with Women on Course. And it'll also connect you to Turn Mentoring, which Turn Mentoring is going to be spinning off to its own web app as well as its own website in the next couple of months. So that'll just be a landing page. But if you go to Fox Paradigm, you can find me. You can find me at LinkedIn, Tina Fox, Fox Paradigm on LinkedIn. And hopefully we can connect in those ways.
Well, I'm going to throw this out there and you could take it wherever you want to take it.
Okay.
But I think there needs to be a book. I feel like I need for you to write a book.
You're being Carol. What did I say about the startup?
I know lots of people who could help you do that, but that's neither here nor there. I really do think there, like, I love your story. I want to find more ways to share it, first of all. But I also feel like you need to come back because this is only a piece of your story. Oh. And I know that you there have been a lot more elements that have gotten you to this place as well. And I want to explore some of those. So this is my invitation to you to come back at a later date and we'll explore some of those other topics too, if you'll come back and join us.
Anytime to chit chat with you, Sandy, I'd be more than happy to do that. I'll start thinking about the book. That'll be the thing that I'm thinking about in the shower, I suppose.
No pressure, no pressure. You got plenty of time. I'm just saying, but I do think, there could be some great demand for that. So we can explore that more further.
You're very kind. See, you're upgrading my frequency just by, so yes, thank you. We all need cheerleaders in life, and Sandy, you're being one for me right now. So thank you.
Well, you've given us some really, really awesome insight today, and I'm so thankful to have you on the show today and so appreciate it. And so again, like I said, we got to have you back.
Well, I'd be happy to. Thank you for all your time today. Best wishes and wild success to your audience. I hope to connect with them at some point in time.
Awesome. So thank you all for listening. You've been here with Tina Fox, and she gave you all her information, and we'll share all that so you know how to find her. And again, you've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments Media. And stay tuned for more shows coming soon. Thanks. You've been listening to the Her Journey Told podcast, powered by Pivotal Moments. For more inspirational content, go to pivotalmoments.org. I'm Sandy Lutton. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to keep an eye out for more episodes where podcasts can be heard. See you next time.